Welcome to another exciting, thrilling episode of Sitting Around Talking Movies. Uh-huh. I'm Neil Rosen. We're talking about Batman versus Superman today. We've got interviews with Ben Affleck, who plays Batman, and Bruce Wayne, and Henry Cavill, who plays Superman and Clark Kent. We're talking about the new Richard Linklater film called Everybody Wants Some. We're talking about this documentary narrated by Kevin Costner called Fastball, which features some of baseball's greats like Bob Gibson and Hank Aaron and George Jeter. Brett and Derek Jeter, and we're going to talk about Anomalisa, which is a Charlie Kaufman film, and I'm joined, as always, by Bill Brigoli.
Hi there.
And Bill McCuddy.
Yeah, that's me.
And guesting this week, we have Mike Sargent, who's been with us before from WBAI, and a new guest today, our friend Jack Rico, who is the editor-in-chief from showbizcafe.com. Let me tell you that again. It's a great site, showbizcafe.com.
I've been there many times. It's great.
It's great.
It's a great cafe.
Yes, yeah. Try the veal when you're there. It's excellent. All right, so listen. So let's start talking about Batman versus Superman. First of all, it's Batman v. Superman, and I called Warner Brothers because I was reviewing it on the air on New York One. And by the way, if you're a first-time listener...
And asked them if it was Batman 5 Superman.
It was like the Roman numeral. No, was it grammatically correct? Because maybe somebody there missed the S.
Right. This is the after show for Talking Pictures, a show that airs on New York One locally and nationally on Time Warner Cable, where we're going to talk about a lot of theatrical releases, but some on-demand stuff, too. And as Bill McCuddy says every week, we watch on-demand movies. You know, there's hundreds of titles out there, but who knows what to watch? Why, Bill?
We watch the bad movies so you don't have
That's absolutely true, but we're going to start off talking about a theatrical release. And as I was saying, so they said, Warner Brothers goes, you know, it's definitely versus. So somebody else explained to me that the V was because it's like a graphic thing because it kind of connects Batman and Superman. Jack, let me start with you. What do you think of the movie?
I thought opposite of what everybody else thought, which is the worst movie made in history. I've seen many of the worst movies made in history. It's not an epic failure. It did not exceed expectations or match expectations, but I thought that along with a lot of the bad that the film had, I thought it had some really great moments. Like, for example, they're introduced the first female superhero character in a film, something that Marvel has not done with Scarlett Johansson's Black Widow, which might actually make them a bit sexist of a studio for doing superheroes, but they're launching the first female superhero with Wonder Woman. I got to tell you, when I was there, the audience almost stood up in ovation as soon as she came out. That's something worth noting.
I kind of stood up when I saw her. I got to say that.
Hey, wait a minute. Hold on a second.
No, she's almost like a Hitchcock cameo in this thing. I mean,
there's
got
no
very,
backstory very as to why she's in the movie.
But that's what they're setting up.
Enough time, Neil.
What are there, like, eight movies that
you
are supposed to come out of this?
A two-minute scene. It's so badly dropped into the movie, this Wonder Woman character, that at one particular point they write a 10-second thing where Batman looks at Superman and says, "Is she with you?" And he goes, "No, I thought she was with you." There's no explanation
funny, though,
as to what she's doing.
It was the
there.
Only ounce of humor that movie had because it was
It's a humorless movie. And Zack Snyder, who directed The Abysmal Man of Steel, which to me...
It was not abysmal.
No, Man of Steel.
Man of Steel was not abysmal.
I hate Henry Cavill. He's wooden. I like Ben Affleck.
Well, what's abysmal was Superman Returns from Bryan Singer.
No, I like that movie.
Oh, my God.
I like Superman Returns.
This is what I don't understand. How is it possible that you like that film?
Well, that movie
was basically an homage to the original Richard Donner films.
Well,
it's anachronistic.
It picks up where
it doesn't even look like it belongs today.
If you've just joined us, this is Jack V. Neal. and
well,
I have to say,
Brigoli, chime in.
Bill, remember when you and I looked at each other during the screening when...
Longingly,
when the kitchen sink came out.
Oh.
We just couldn't help it.
There's literally a kitchen sink.
Right, they've thrown everything into this movie, including the kitchen sink.
I got to tell you, Neil, for the first hour, I was really rocking with this movie. I mean, we saw it in a place that had like...
Barker lounge seat,
like Lazy Boy recliners.
That's right.
We were on 42nd Street at the
Dolby Theater.
The famous
Bedbug.
Did you see
Bedbug?
Yeah.
The
Bedbug
Theater. What's nice is the bed bugs actually vibrate with you, so
is
it's kind of nice.
Is that the 4D effect?
Yeah.
No,
but
I was
digging it. I thought for the first hour there was an economy to the script, and the scenes were moving along. It did a very good job of back and forth in the two guys. But then, man, it just jumps off the rails about probably at the two-thirds point. But And you know what? One of the things that we were talking about that bugged us was that the Martha, there's a twist in the movie where
it's
fighting.
A Freudian thing. All of a sudden, it's like, I hate, first of all, it's never established, you know, fully why these two people hate each other. They want to make, okay, DC's big two marquee characters are Batman and Superman. So naturally, DC goes, you know, we've got to compete with Marvel. You know, let's make a movie and have Batman, you know, fight Superman. And
the idea that Lex Luthor could have set that up and tricked them both into fighting each other is kind of cool, but it's not really realized.
I think you could have come up with 100 better ideas on why these two people had to fight each other. It's never even made that clear why they're fighting each other, and the reason that they give to me doesn't justify the fight. And then, I like the fight from a technical standpoint. That's one of the highlights of the film. The 20-minute sequence when Batman and Superman actually fight each other, I actually thought that that was entertaining. And there's a couple of moments here and there when they humanize the characters, specifically Clark Kent when he's talking to Lois Lane, played by, what's her name?
Amy Adams.
That's okay. But so much of this movie is just convoluted and a stretch. We're going to make this square peg fit into this round hole without giving away much. There's a mother component into this, played by Diane Lane, and all of a sudden, like you said, McCuddy, he mentions the magic name.
But
he mentions the magic name.
It turns out that's in the
comic
books.
You're my friend now. I'm devoted to you.
It turns out that's in the comic books. You know, when you were complaining about that, I went back and did a little research. I'll teach you how to do that later. And it turns out that in the comic books, Martha is the name of both mom. But the thing that's weird is it becomes almost a laugh out loud moment for you in the film if you don't know that. And even if you do, it's kind of a stupid reason to stop fighting. We both have the same mom name.
I mean, and then it's not just, it's right. Not only is it a reason to stop fighting, it's like, not only am I going to not fight and try to kill you, now I am going to devote my life to being your friend and saving. I mean, it's just poorly written. Come on, Jack.
No,
you got to give me.
It's not that it's poorly written, it's poorly edited because that was written in. And now, some dimension, Bill was mentioning the comic books. If you read the comic books, it's two comic books. It's a series that Frank Miller wrote, Batman versus Superman, and it's also the Death of Superman, which is all combined into like basically one film. In that, if you read those comic books, this movie kind of entails most of those storylines in one. The problem is, and you've heard this before, Zack Snyder supposedly did a 3-hour film. Half hour of that film was cut out.
Oh, God, another half an hour?
And not because he was forced to, because he supposedly wanted it to. So we're supposedly going to see the 3-hour cut in the Blu-ray director's cut.
Oh, God.
Which is more of a hard
question about that one.
Let me move to the edge of my seat.
Does Lois Lane stand up in the bathtub in the 3-hour?
I almost yelled that in the theater. If you've seen the movie, you know that he walks in on her in the bathroom, and they shoot it so that she's, well, there's a bathtub in the bathroom. He walks into the bathroom.
Yes,
and
that's
so
true.
I almost said, stand up! Like, and I know we've gotten a huge laugh in this audience, but
Jack, since you're so passionate, and right. You know, I think you're playing. You know, you're defending it more than you actually, because you started out by saying you don't hate it as much as everybody else, but you don't. I think, you know, on a scale of like 1 to 4, what would you give it? You'd give it 2.
No, I'd probably give it a 2, 2.5.
Listen, okay.
Here's the thing. Let me clarify exactly how I feel about this film. This film is not the best superhero film yet. I didn't love it. I liked it modestly. But what I don't like is the amount of spew of hatred that's being spewed by everyone calling it the worst movie ever made.
I don't think that's true.
I didn't say
I think it's
that's what everybody's
right, throwing. Jack,
I think it's like, what's,
Jack,
it, what's it like 30%
on
Rotten
Tomatoes?
And so
I'm trying to be
tomatoes,
as
or?
Unbiased as possible, talking about the good and also talking about the bad. And in that process, I want to point out that this movie does have some good things worthy of praise.
Well, I said that. Listen, right. On New York One and on Time Warner Cable, where I review these things. Mm-hmm. I have this thing called a Big Apple rating scale, where 4 is the highest level and half a wormy apple is the lowest. Mm-hmm. And I gave this 2.5 apples. So I don't think this is by any chance the worst movie that I've ever seen. I mean, 2.5, it's not like go run and see this, but I thought that, you know, as I mentioned previously, I thought the fight sequence between the two of them was fine, but I hate Henry Cavill. And the worst thing about the movie is after this fight, they create this, from the comic books, there's right. this horrible, first of all, the CGI in this movie was just laughable through many, many spots. And they have this.
This from the same guy who liked the fight sequence?
The fight sequence was fun because it was just like, once I'm like, you're waiting so long for the fight sequence. When they're fighting each other, it was like, okay, I'm entertained to some
extent. Spoiler alert, they use CGI in the fight
sequence. But here's the thing, they create this globby character called Doomsday that, and by the way, Jesse Eisenberg as Lex Luthor, talk about over-the-top hammy acting, too over-the-top, way over-the-top, but this CGI monster, all of a sudden, Wonder Woman drops in.
Gene Hackman was so refined.
I was just going to say that,
What's that?
Gene Hackman was so refined.
Right. Wonder Woman drops in from out of the sky, and all the three of them, Batman, Superman, and Wonder Woman, are fighting this blobby, horribly CGI'd character called Doomsday, and it just is this endless, endless sequence. Did you like that Doomsday sequence?
I did not like the way visually Doomsday looked like, but I did like the fact that they introduced him because finally, for the first time ever, one of the greatest scripts in comic book history of Superman basically fighting the man or the thing that ultimately destroys him was something that at some point someone needed to incorporate into a Superman film. They did this with Smallville. It was stretched out in about 5 to 10 episodes. And I thoroughly enjoyed that. The problem of this is it should have been longer. Batman versus Superman should have been the full 3 hours. If you're going to give me 2.5, give me the 3 hours. There's so many movies that have been 3 hours that have actually done. I mean, Avatar was 3 hours. Titanic was 3 hours. And look at the amount of money it made. Now, this one's making a lot of money as well.
This movie is very critic-proof. We're acting like this is a huge bomb, and it's one of the biggest openings.
Well, no, not so much, because what one of the things that I've been reading about is that the drop-off, it was like a 38% drop-off and then a 58% drop-off.
Over the weekend. Days, yeah. So still managed to pull in $180 million.
It did, but I don't think it's going to make the kind of money they want it to make.
Okay, so Mike, is this going to make the kind of money that Deadpool made? Okay,
I don't think so. I think because Deadpool, the thing about Deadpool is Deadpool comes like in the comics after there've been enough comic movies that you can do a comic movie that makes fun of comic movies. Mm-hmm. So it's the context of it.
Boy, there's nothing making fun of nothing in this movie. As you said, there's one or two good jokes in it, and otherwise, it's kind of dark and
humorless.
I think the original, the idea that it was two comic books makes a lot of sense to me.
Well, let me ask you all something.
But two comic books that deserve to be merged into one movie?
Yeah, but don't you think that it's smart for DC to take a different approach than Marvel? Marvel's doing
stuff absolutely.
That's funny.
No, they're trying to be Marvel.
They
looked at the Avengers series just the way when Disney bought Marvel and they did not have the rights to Spider-Man and they did not have the rights to a couple of other key Marvel characters. So they decided, okay, we'll go to the well. Captain America, we're getting that. We're getting Iron Man. And they started making movies with these lesser-known Marvel characters. Mm-hmm. And
Tinfoil guy. I'm looking forward to that.
And then they had, as we all know,
Wonder
they had individual
Woman.
Movies with all of these people. And then they were all together in the Avenger movies. And I'm sure DC looked at that and is trying to emulate the same formula and going, okay, we'll put Wonder Woman in there. I think the Flash is coming in for this Justice League, sort of Captain America kind of Avengers kind of thing where the Justice League Flash will be in there. Aquaman is probably
going to relaunch
be in.
The Green Lantern.
Yeah, they're going to put all these characters in and they're trying to do the same thing that Marvel did in terms of financial success. They looked at that and they said, well, we're DC. We have characters too. That's what we're going to do.
I agree with you in terms of the format, the formula, the pattern, the method they're trying to use in order to create these movies. I understand that that's big business, but what I disagree with is that they're exactly wanting to be Marvel. Marvel is wholesome, family fun. It's jokey. It's childish, infantile to a certain extent. This is a different approach. This is the Christopher Nolan DNA mm-hmm. in essence that's been injected.
Well, he's
into
one of the producers on this movie.
Yeah, exactly. And I wish he probably had directed the film, but ultimately they're more gloomy. They're more dark. They're meant for more of an adult audience than 12-year-olds.
Before we hear from Ben Affleck and Henry Cavill, I'm going to tell you that I find the fact you were talking earlier about Superman Returns, the Bryan Singer one, my favorite Superman movie is old school is Superman 2 when he fights.
When he fights.
These nerds are all high fiving each other right now. For those of you listening,
okay, it's great, and you got to realize it was done decades ago.
1980,
right? But the chopping, you know, the destroying Times Square at the time was mind blowing, and you know, Superman fighting again like this blobby doomsday thing. Zod, who was from Krypton, who has the same powers. It was just a lot of fun. And Superman Returns, which was done by Bryan Singer, actually kind of ignored the Richard Pryor Superman.
It had
and,
to.
Right, yeah. Right. And kind of picked up, like, after Superman 2. And I liked the guy who played Brandon Routh, I think.
Brandon Routh.
I thought he was terrific. And I thought that there was humor in there and there was a warmness. And this is just, yes, dark and humorless. But let's hear from Mr. Bill Bregoli, who's had the opportunity to talk to the stars of this movie.
And I do have a fine clip of Ben Affleck talking about why this is different than all the other Batman movies.
Batman exists now with other superheroes, which hadn't really happened before. You know, you've got Superman there, and you've got Wonder Woman, and you've got the possibility of these other characters emerging. And so putting him in a world where those characters exist very much changes the calculus for Batman in a lot of different ways.
And then Henry Cavill talked about sort of the same thing, what makes this one different, and all of Superman's problems.
Batman is willing to inflict pain to send a message and give the lesson. Superman does his utmost to avoid that. And therein lies a big difference. And that leads to the different methods of dealing justice.
Everybody Wants Some is the name of a new movie by writer-director Richard Linklater. Richard Linklater did Boyhood. Richard Linklater did School of Rock. He did Bernie. He did those three movies with Julie Delpy and Ethan Hawke, Before Sunrise, Before Sunset, Before Midnight. This is his latest film, and he's calling this...
And all of those are better than this is...
No, I like this movie, but let me tell everybody what it's about first. It's been called, what, the spiritual sequel to Dazed and Confused, which looked at high school in the 70s. This is set in 1980, and it's about a guy by the name of Jake, played by Blake Jenner. He's a college freshman. He arrives at this Texas University on a baseball scholarship. He was a star pitcher in high school, but everybody on this baseball team in this university was a star in their high school, so he's no longer the big man on campus, and he has to adjust to that. He's living in a house with all the other baseball players. They have a prejudice against pitchers for some reason, which is kind of funny. And
emphasis on kind of.
There are 3 days before classes start. So what do they do for the 3 days? Well, it's a wild time of partying, drugs, drinking,
semi-wild,
and most importantly for these guys, getting laid.
And also, most importantly, all acting like Matthew McConaughey. They're all channeling Matthew McConaughey in this thing.
Well, I'm telling you, the guys that, you know, are in this particular movie are really, I'm watching this thing and I'm saying they're going to be, who's the next Matthew McConaughey that's going to, they're all these good looking guys.
There's 7 to choose from now.
Right, who's the next, I think you're looking at like one of these movies like, I don't know, you see a movie from like 30 years ago and like, look who was in this, they were all nobody at the time.
So I paid to go see a screen test, you're basically saying.
No, I think
saying.
That a lot of the people that you see in this movie are going to be big stars. And the girl who this main character, Jake, wants to go more than a one night stand on, he wants to actually have a relationship with her. In real life, her name is Zoe Deutsch, and she's Leah Thompson's daughter.
And looks exactly
right.
Like her.
Right, and also the director,
spooky.
Howard Deutsch.
Yeah, Howard Deutsch, right.
And she's their daughter, and she's really good.
Howard the Deutsch.
The soundtrack of the 80s, they play great 80s music throughout the whole thing. The look of the film, from the haircuts to the costumes to the,
soundtrack.
Everything about this really, like, to the Marantz receiver that's in the house with the stereo equipment. Everything was spot on. And what I really liked about the film was the fact that I know McCuddy's shaking his head that he didn't like the movie. I thought that, you know, it really kind of, Linklater's not that concerned with plot. It's more about having a vibe, and I kind of felt like it was nostalgic for me, and it brought me back to this other time. And it was,
because you're often driving around going, I hope this movie doesn't have a good story. I just wanted to have a good vibe.
No, it
well,
was...
Well, all right. First of all, I got to say I disagree with you, Bill, because I had never seen Dazed and Confused. I'd always heard it's a classic. So I watched it last night. Okay, I get it. I think that, you know, it's meandering like a lot of Linklater films, but I thought this was much better. I like these characters better. I think that this actually had a little bit of something to say. I related to it more, having gone to art school.
Did you love it?
I liked it. I didn't love it, but I liked it. I liked it.
So it's the cream of the crap of the two movies.
Well, I wouldn't say the cream of the crap. I would just say that it was better. I didn't like it as much as Bernie, okay?
Yeah.
I probably liked it a little bit more, or right around. I think Boyhood is interesting. Much more interesting, and it's much more groundbreaking in what it did.
Landmark film.
It's a much more of a landmark type film. But I thought this film was good. I mean, again, you have to be a certain age. If you grew up in the 80s, this means something to you.
Listen,
I was in high school.
We all grew up in the 80s?
Yeah. Well,
if you look a little deeper in this film.
I was a little more grown up than you.
Yes.
It shows this philosophy that's being imparted in this movie is these kids are 18, 19 years old, and they know that they don't have to figure out their entire life.
Right.
They have 3 days, and they might not know that this is the greatest time of their lives. You know, there's that old quote that says, youth is wasted on the young. But these people are, excuse me, these
young
people are.
Young and wasted.
They are wasted, and they're trying to have a lot of fun.
So they don't have to do anything.
I'm having fun.
They don't have to do anything, is what you're saying.
Well, I'll be honest with you. I was kind of amazed that it maintained the buoyancy that it did, that it held my, because there's really no story. They kind of wander from party to party,
right,
from scene to scene. They joke with each other. They make fun of each other.
That's because Linklater, as a director and a storyteller, is only concerned with time and not story.
Well, I think he's concerned with
a switch.
Character.
Things happen for 12 years in Boyhood or one day and Before Midnight, and he turns it off. And what happens in that period of time is what he thinks constitutes good storytelling.
Yeah, but think about this. Very often in a film, you know, if you study screenwriting, they tell you that, you know, character is story. And he kind of throws that out, where it's not about the story, it's more about the dialogue. What these characters say how their conversation,
yes,
is how you understand who they are. And in reality, that's how we know each other. I mean, if I go out with Jack, I may know that he's a wild man. But if I have a conversation with Jack, I know he's a wild man. So, you know what I'm saying?
The competitiveness.
I enjoyed that.
I just hope you have more interesting conversations than these guys do in this
Listen,
movie. That's all I'm saying.
I found it interesting that these guys on this baseball team were competitive about everything.
Yes.
I mean, everything.
And I like that, too. Having gone to art school, I was like the star artist.
And then they go
school,
to a party.
And then I go to a big school.
A theater geek party. And they're introduced to a whole different world.
Loved it. Loved
and then
it.
They're so interested in getting laid, they keep posing. They go to like this, you know, Cotton Eye Joe, you know, square dance
like
party.
Zelig.
And then they go to a disco party.
And they go to a rave.
Right, they go to a rave. And you see the punk rock scene in the 80s. So, and everything is done really well. It's very, very realistically done. I like the movie.
I have a question for Bill. Bill, I want to get sort of your emotional, I guess, sentiment about the film as opposed to more of the structure that there's no story. But what exactly is it that you did not necessarily connect with here?
I thought the stories these guys tell each other and the way that they interacted was very flat and very ordinary and a little too realistic, because it didn't elevate itself to the point of cinematic storytelling for
me. So what
me.
Were you expecting?
It was more
was
like
it
a documentary.
Was it that level
No, it was actually, I knew it was going to have the slacker kind of Daisy put me in a mood that Dazed and Confused did.
And
I'm not a huge Dazed and Confused guy, although I admire it. This one I just thought was kind of a waste of time.
Well, on the show today, you were alone. Mike and I liked it, and Lisa, one of our other colleagues, liked it. And it's getting, you always like to quote Rotten Tomatoes. I mean, this is your big thing, Bill McCuddy, is to quote Rotten Tomatoes. It's like a 92 or something percent on Rotten Tomatoes. It's getting rave reviews, not to say that is the end all be all.
It's all about Richard Linklater, as far as I'm concerned. I really think it's
you,
the Emperor's New Clothes.
Like
if that had been somebody
else's,
that
had
been
like
somebody
the before
else's
trilogy,
movie?
Before Midnight, before.
I loved every single one of the before.
Before
films,
Midnight, before
just because of the
Sunset and before.
I had never
Sunrise.
Seen a film, all three of them. As soon as I saw the first part of the Before franchise, I had never up to that point seen a romantic film that went so deep into getting to know characters on such a substantial level, where the dialogue was the mm-hmm. action, the conflict,
right.
the drama,
exactly.
the,
yeah.
the endearment.
It's a slice
everything.
Of life, and that's
and it
what
works
this movie
in those.
Is.
It definitely works
Did
in those.
Two people talking for 2 hours.
Do you have
hours.
A favorite of the three of them?
I would probably say Before Midnight. That was because
the last one.
The last one, because the...
Yeah, it shows you the tedium...
Isn't the last one Before Sunset?
Well, it's...
No, it was before Sunrise. Before Sunrise is where they meet.
Before
Sunset. That's my favorite one.
Right, you're
simply
right.
Simply because, again, it takes place in a 24-hour period. It's very romantic. It's when Ethan Hawke's character meets Julie Delpy's character, and he convinces her to get off the train in, I believe, is it Vienna?
Yeah, Vienna, right. Yeah.
Right, and they just have this whirlwind crazy day, and it's just wonderful and it's romantic. Before Sunset, at the end of Before Sunrise, it's like, let's meet in this spot, what is it, 7 years later or mm-hmm. something, like that. And they are a year later, and they don't. One of them doesn't show, and they run into each other at a book signing a number of years later. That's very interesting. And Before Midnight, if you've ever been in a very long-term relationship or been married, it just shows you. I mean, it's a lot going on. Well, if you're married, it's not like you have these unbelievable days. I mean, it's just a kind of like a look at a day and the life of these people. It's almost like a Bergman Scenes from a Marriage
but
thing.
But the drama
it's brilliantly done.
In Before Midnight was almost piercing through the screen to the point that you almost felt like you just caught a real life fight amongst
a brilliant trilogy.
It's unbelievably well done. The writing was so stellar. It should have been nominated for Best Picture at the Oscars.
And they all write, you know, even though Linklater in the first one, Linklater's the only sole writing credit. The last two, Hawke and Delpy share writing credits because they all collaborate. And it looks like it's all been improvised. And Hawke told me that, no, and Delpy said the same thing. It's rehearsed to death, but nothing, once they get it down, there's nothing that deviates from what's written on the page, but they all kind of collaborate together. If there's going to be a fourth one...
there is. It's Before Daylight Savings Time. And they wander around. They're really confused. They oversleep. They're not sure what time it is.
That's right. That's what it is.
One little gem that I love about Richard Linklater is Waking Life. I'm not sure if anybody has that.
Yeah, the animated thing.
It doesn't do it for me either.
3 in the morning, I was watching HBO. Movie comes on. I had no idea it was Richard Linklater. It kind of changed my life because... Have you ever seen a film so philosophically existential that kind of just connects with you on an intellectual level?
Not that film.
What kind of director are you doing?
That film didn't do it for me.
You touched upon something very important. Finish what you're going to say, though.
So I really like that. And that's the type of film that everybody has a question is, what is my purpose in life? And that movie, I love the fact that he tackled it in the most original way because it's almost an animated version of real life people. And then I also like Me and Orson Welles. I'm a huge Orson Welles fan. And I thought he found Christian McKay, who is the doppelganger of Orson Welles.
Young Orson Welles,
And it goes back to the Mercury Theater, the beginnings of theater with Zac Efron. I mean, that was one of the...
You want to know a great Orson Welles movie about Orson Welles? I wish I could come up with the number correctly, but it's called RKO.
The Third Man.
RKO, whatever they called Citizen Kane while they were filming it. It wasn't Citizen Kane.
RKO 1452 or something.
Yeah, and it's... Liev Schreiber plays Orson Welles.
That was great.
And it shows you how he, like, they're on the, RKO lot, and he goes, I want to get a shot. Well, the floor, put a hole in the floor and put the camera 10 feet below. It's just really, really interesting.
All right, I'll check it out.
I also like the Orson Welles, an actress playing Orson Welles, cameo in one of my favorite, probably my favorite Tim Burton movie, Ed Wood, when Ed Wood runs in like a coffee shop to Orson Welles. It looked the worst director in the history of film, meaning the greatest director in the history of film, and they're having a discussion on how to make films, and that's so like Fellini-esque wacky. I really like
that. That's an amazing book, by the way.
I didn't look it up. 14, I think it's called 281. I think it's called RKO 281. Well, I'm going to cheat and look it up on the phone.
A great movie about Orson Welles is, a great book, is Henry Jaglom. Am I saying that?
Right, Henry Jaglom, yes.
They had lunch together at this one restaurant for 10 years.
Yes, they were good friends.
They recorded them all, it's a great read. You'll really enjoy it.
I know Henry Jaglom. Well, you made an interesting point about Richard Linklater.
RKO 281, I was correct.
Filmmakers. What I like about Richard Linklater, and I think we can forget sometimes as filmgoers and film critics, is that, straight ahead narrative storytelling is not the only way to make a movie. Films are not, there are experimental films, and I think that it takes, a lot of boldness these days to be experimental, to do something that's animated and existential, to do something even like what Charlie Kaufman did where it's puppets and playing. To me, I appreciate...
Well, let's talk about that film.
Don't experiment on my time.
Well, I'd like to talk about Anomalisa.
The film is an experience. It is a visceral experience, and the experience of a Linklater film is different than a regular filmmaker's film.
Animalisa is fascinating to me. Mike, why don't you tell people what Animalisa is?
Animalisa, it's Animalisa.
Animalisa.
I know, you're thinking of the Animalisa who does the show.
Animalisa. Like, think of Anomaly, which is where the title comes from.
Exactly.
Anomaly and Animalisa. Animalisa, right.
Which you find out in the movie. Animalisa is about a man who's having essentially an existential crisis. We're not quite sure. He's left a wife, possibly a girlfriend. We know he's run away from relationships, and he ends up going to a conference where he's going to be speaking on marketing, just how to take care of people. But he's lost. He's looking for something. He's looking to feel alive again. And the part of the conceit of the film is not only that it's puppets, but all of the characters, with the exception of the main character and the woman he meets, are all voiced by the same man.
This guy,
Tom Noonan.
Which I thought was a little strange when I saw it. I was like, hey, wait a minute. Why?
Exactly.
Right.
I thought it was woman in drag. Right.
That was the only thing you thought was strange about the movie?
I mean, it was the thing that stood out the most to me.
What do you think of it?
You know what? It annoyed the hell out of me.
Really?
Didn't it?
It really
did.
The movie did.
I couldn't leave that theater fast enough.
Well, wow. Amen, brother.
Really? Well, to me...
I like the film.
I like the film, too.
I like the film a lot.
I had seen
it's a gimmick. It's
film.
A gimmick in search of a better movie.
First of all...
I disagree.
What works is the fact that it's this stop-motion animation.
Yes.
I mean, you know, watching two people having sex on a live-action film would be kind of crass in this movie. But when you watch stop-motion animation puppets, I'm like, oh, my God, look what's going on here.
Sadly.
I also thought that was very savvy, too.
Puppet sex scene.
Sadly, sex at my house is...
You want to see good puppet sex?
Kermit and Miss Piggy?
Team America World Police.
Team America.
I think you guys are going for the wrong thing. I don't think.
I just want to point out that sadly at my house, sex is stop motion.
It is. Oh, come on. Listen, I think that part of the point of having the sex or showing him urinating in the toilet is for you to really, it's to add to the illusion.
To humanize, to add to the illusion
for you to suspend.
You guys are giving this movie much credit.
There are scenes in this movie that would not have worked in live action that I pay attention to more because of this unbelievable stop motion animation.
Right. So the story wasn't important to you, it was the stop motion. I like the story, but let me get to this first.
He checks into the hotel, and we've all had this experience where the bellboy just does these ridiculous things like, oh, here's the mini bar, here's the bathroom, and he's just going on and on, and watching this in stop motion, it's just fascinating. He picks up this remote, and on the remote, instead of like room service, there's like an image of a turkey, and there's an image of a Coke. It's like, what food do you want to order? All these little subtle Charlie Kaufman touches. Even the cab driver conversation. He's in Cincinnati, and the guy's like, you got to see the zoo. Well, I'm only here for a day. You got to do this. You got to do that. And the fact that I'm watching this in stop motion, and there's all these background noises, just adds a whole different layer to this entire movie. What you talked about, Jack, the fact that everybody talks in a male voice, and you were confused. I was confused. I think you're supposed to be confused in the beginning, and then after a while, you get it, and you're like, oh, I see. Right. Everybody sounds the same, and that's why... He likes Lisa because she sounds different.
Because she's voiced by a different actor.
No, but the point is it shows you this euphoria of when you first meet somebody and there's that endorphin kick-in of like falling in love. And then I don't want to really give it away, but as her voice starts changing and you fall out of that. Right.
Jennifer Jason Leigh, by the way.
Yeah, I know.
Does the,
I know.
I
find it a very interesting movie. I love Charlie Kaufman. I love Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind. I love Adaptation. I didn't like that Cinkadosh movie. But this was not a misfire. But apparently, according to Bregoli, who couldn't wait to get out of the theater.
And I agree.
Oh, Bill McCuddy, what do you like?
Well, not that.
I don't know. I'll
say this, Bill. Look, you know, that movie isn't for everyone. There's certain movies that are just not for the masses. I definitely think it's not for everyone. But if you like that sort of, touch that Charlie Kaufman gives his movies, It will resonate with some. It won't resonate with others. And I mean, I can understand why.
I'm a huge Kaufman fan, but I have a feeling if you watch this on demand, I think they give you like 5 minutes. You'll either like it in the first 3.5 minutes and want to stay with it, or you'll know this is not for you.
I was sucked in immediately.
And you can get out.
Did we all like Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind?
Brilliant film.
It took me a while. It was an acquired taste. I had to see that movie 2 or 3 times to finally understand the truth.
It's brilliant. It's brilliant. You watch the whole movie, and then you watch the whole movie. Forget about going back and watching the movie again. Even if you watch watch it one time, you go, there's two movies within the movie. There's the movie, and then there's the explanation of what you just saw in the first half of the movie. And it's just genius. And I think Kate Winslet still does the best American accent.
She's unbelievable.
It's either her or the guy who's from House. Those are the two best...
Doctor.
Those are the two best English people who do American accents. Before we go, I want to talk about one more movie, and it's a documentary called Fastball. And, you know, if you like baseball, I think you're going to really like this. And it is a documentary on who threw the fastest pitch ever in the major leagues. And if you are a lover of baseball, it's got interviews with pitchers such as Goose Gossage and Bob Gibson, and it has other hitters like Derek Jeter and Hank Aaron talking about facing these pitchers and how, which was, I thought, very enlightening, how they're scared to death if somebody's pitching 100-mile-an-hour fastball, that if they get hit in the head, they could die.
I'm not a baseball guy, and I have to tell you that the science of what they've been able to determine after, you know, radar and whatnot will make it interesting for anybody, I think, watching this. You don't have to be a huge baseball fan. I thought it was fascinating.
What do you think?
No, I agree with you, and because I am not a baseball fan, I never watch baseball. I don't care about baseball. I don't even know who's playing. I've seen one baseball game in my life. But I was fascinated. I was fascinated by just everything you were saying, seeing who all these players were. There are a lot of names I'd always heard. Goose Gossage, I'd heard these names. I knew they were baseball players. But seeing who they are in the context of baseball, seeing how certain things have become iconic and what they were, seeing how the military were the first to measure the speed of a baseball because they're the only ones who could do it with their technology, all of that I found
fascinating. That was great. Somebody's driving a motorcycle
right
at like 87 miles an hour and somebody's pitching, and what can go through the piece of paper that they put up there faster. I mean, before they came up with like radar guns and stuff. Plus there's a Dream Team roundtable if you're a baseball fan, where such greats as Johnny Bench and Al Kaline are sitting around. They're all talking about, you know, catching for these people and you know, being, you know, around these pitchers. And I thought it was really, if you love baseball, you're going to like it.
Something else that I thought was interesting, too, that I'd never considered about baseball, especially about a pitcher, which is that psychological component, which I thought was interesting. You know, you are someone else when you're on the field. You're looking to literally strike these people out or, you know, in some way mesmerize them. And I thought it was fascinating that the pitchers would say the batters couldn't look them in the eye when they were pitching.
Well, there's a whole intimidation thing that they talk about.
I thought that was fascinating.
Like the pitchers are talking, I mean, all these insights that they're staring down the batters and they're trying to intimidate them, and they said it was working. And
yeah, that's all fascinating. There's no question.
It made the game a lot more interesting than I ever thought.
Nolan Ryan talks about how, you know, he thought his career would be over like in the 30s, and he actually lasted to his mid-40s like pitching. I mean, you know.
I will have to admit that I did watch it and think I might have liked it even more if it was in stop-motion animation.
It would have made it more enticing.
So you got me on that one.
Oh, here, I'll say this. I am a baseball fan, and I do remember that Rob Dibble, it's a name that not many people know, used to play for the Cincinnati Reds and was one of the first pitchers, how's that, Nolan Ryan, to actually throw over 100 miles per hour. And his long life battle was with Howard Johnson, who played for the Mets in third base. Every time that Rob Dibble came in to save a game, Howard Johnson would hit a home run off of him to win the game for the Mets. And that level of drama as a fan, oh my God, this is the only guy that can hit the 100 miles per hour, is not only a testament to the special skill that men who throw over 100 miles an hour, anybody here, all of us, if I ask you to throw a fastball, you probably get to 45, 55 miles per hour.
Oh, you're too kind.
So to get to 100 is
I was
such
clocked
a special
at 35
skill.
Miles.
And to hit one is even more.
What they say in the movie, which was really enlightening to me, is they say that the difference, you would think there would be very little difference between throwing a 96-mile-an-hour fastball and a 100-mile-an-hour fastball. You would figure, like, you know, if you could hit a 96, they said unbelievably different because the brain
take that image and allow you to have the reflexes
right
to catch.
It's amazing these guys just don't swing and hope they hit a ball. Not
I know,
even,
that's
not
what
even
I was
looking
thinking.
At it coming out of the
guy's
hand.
Matter of fact, seeing the documentary made me appreciate the Linklater film a little bit more.
Well, the Linklater film, again, it's true. You see the documentary, and then you see the Linklater film.
No, let's
guys
not
the...
give anybody a reason to watch that.
But the technical wizardry that they could do now, where they could actually go back and look at old films of pictures from the 30s and the 40s and determine who is the fastest of all time.
I think fastball is more of an extension of what ESPN did with sports science. Which
it is. One of the directors from that 30 on 30 ESPN
series. It has to be.
That's the director of
fastball.
It's
been a big hit with a lot of sports fans, and I think this was just a more feature-length version of those sports science segments.
So next week on the show, I'm looking up and I'm seeing that we have a television here. There's Jack Parr, Johnny Carson, and building that's up in flames.
That is weird, weird, wild stuff.
What
I
is
did
going
not know
on
that.
In this news story? I have
Very
no
good.
Idea.
Why
but,
is there?
Oh, well, there you go. All right. Anyway, next week on the show, we are going to talk about three new releases that are called Day and Date. They open in theaters and they open simultaneously on demand. One is called One More Time, one is called Mr. Right, and one is called The Invitation. And we're also going to talk about in theaters the movie Demolition, which stars Jake Gyllenhaal.
I liked it.
And I liked it too. And the female lead is Liev Schreiber's wife, Naomi Watts.
You
can
talk about a Chris Walker film, so you have to tune in.
And it's on behalf of.
We're going to talk about Jake Gyllenhaal films.
And we're going to talk about Jake Gyllenhaal.
But not The Prince of Persia.
They tried to make him
into an action star.
It's the whitewashing.
I didn't buy
was
that.
Was it him as an action horror star or him being Persian that you
it was? It was him as an action star, which, you know,
Jack,
I had a hard time.
It was a video game.
I used to play Prince of Persia. And when I saw Jake Gyllenhaal, I always said to myself, that guy doesn't look like the character.
Right,
on
I'm
the
pretty
video
sure
game.
That I just didn't buy because I'm pretty sure that was the chick from Brokeback Mountain.
Since you're not going to be here next week, Jack, and I'm going to have an argument with all these people. Did you like Love and Other Drugs, Jake Gyllenhaal movie?
The one with
Anne Hathaway.
I did like it.
Well,
actually.
Yeah, I mean, I like
it.
The first
time
I saw Anne Hathaway completely nude.
Regoli, you didn't like it, did you?
What, Love and Other Drugs?
Yeah.
Actually, I enjoyed life.
All right, look at that. No argument.
No, gotta go.
You're like Mr. I was wishing
it was stop motion animation.
You're Debbie Downer today. Well, on behalf of the Hates Everything Bill McCuddy this week.
the curmudgeon.
Right. HatesEverything.com.
Thank you, Bill McCuddy. Thank you, Mike Sargent.
You're welcome.
Jack, did you have a good time? Jack
I
Rico.
I had a great time.
Jack
you guys.
Rico from
it.
The editor-in-chief. Go to this site. It's really good. ShowbizCafe.com. Listen to Mike Sargent on WBAI. And from Bill Bregoli, as always.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, it's as always. Thank you, who does art.
No,
not
hey
only
now.
With your... before we go, I'm sorry. I do want to add something. I want to talk about Gary Shandling. If we have a moment. Well, it's a podcast. We have unlimited time. But don't tune out, because Gary Shandling created one of the greatest sitcoms to me in the history of television.
Two of them, actually.
I think Larry Sanders Show was not only a landmark show, which took you behind the scenes of a... You know, he hosted The Tonight Show so many times, and they offered him The Tonight Show, from what I'm to understand, when Johnny left and Jay Leno got it, but he was first offered to Gary Shandling, and he said, no, I want to do something different. And the brilliance of that show, if you've never seen the Larry Sanders Show, it's on DVD, I think it's on Netflix or something. I mean, it shows...
It's coming back to HBO, they just announced yesterday.
It shows
really?
You could tune into it, and you could see, like, it's shot on videotape, the talk show parts, you think you're watching an actual talk show, and then when they go to a commercial or they're in the offices, it's shot on film, and it's really this backbiting, snarky. It's wonderful. And
Jon Stewart was in this thing. Janine Garofalo.
Judd Apatow cut his teeth on this thing. Jeremy Piven was in this. All these people got their star. Bob Odenkirk.
And then all these famous
Peter
stars
Tolan, who
came
created
on
Rescue
became,
Me.
And Killer
Radner
plays himself.
Almost like a Linklater film.
Here's the thing.
But good.
I remember seeing the Gary Shandling Show. It was on Fox at one point.
It's Gary Shandling Show.
Showtime right. also.
Yeah, it was on Showtime. Yeah. But I was 11 years old. Because this happened when 1986, 1990, when that show originally came. I was 11, 12 years old. And I had turned on the TV. And I had to tell you, I just didn't understand the humor. So now I'm going to go ahead and see it again to see if I can appreciate sort of
Well, it was so groundbreaking. I mean, he broke the fourth wall. He talked to the camera. To go to different parts in his house, he would get in a golf cart and drive around. He acknowledged the studio audience there, so it really was kind of like nothing else you'd seen.
He's evolutionary, right?
He's a true comedic genius, and You know, if you want to see the last thing he ever did, Comedians in Cars Getting Coffee.
Comedians in Cars Getting Coffee.
It was the last thing that he did, and it was wonderful. Jerry and him. Jerry Seinfeld did his show on a soundstage.
He went out to the lots where they had filmed
their respective shows. Directly across from where they did the Larry Sanders show, and what you found out is that, you know, when Larry David left the show, Jerry was in charge of everything, and he would go right across to the other lot across the street, and Gary Shanley would help punch up the script and stuff like
that's
that.
Great.
You're being too modest. I'm loath to bring out something that only you can tell us, but you had a special kind of relationship with him.
Well, Gary, I loved the Larry Sanders show so much. Gary was very publicity shy. When he would come to New York to do publicity, he would only talk to three journalists in New York, and I was privileged to be one of those journalists.
Wow.
He knew that I got that show, and I loved that show. And, you know,
the other two were Joe Franklin and a guy in cable on Long Island.
He was just a really, really good guy. And I mean, we would sit and talk for usually you get these interviews, these junket interviews. Jack Rico and I do them. They're 5 minutes, 6 minutes. He would sit down with me for an hour, and we would just talk about tons of stuff. And he was just
Tell about the one time he busted you.
When he busted me?
Yeah. You were interviewing him, and you start telling us.
That was great. It was the release of It's Gary Shandling's Show, the entire box set on DVD. And I'm interviewing him, and he's talking about the show and creating the show, which led me to think of something where I said, you know, that's interesting. I have a story like that. And I started telling a personal story, and he interrupts me, and he goes, you know, Neil, you're supposed to be interviewing me. And it was just, and it's not, in the way I'm just delivered it, it's not even coming across as nice, but his timing and comedic delivery is just so brilliant. It was hysterically funny.
Can we listen to this somewhere? Do you have it?
Yeah, let's put it to Bill.
Let me try to dig it out.
He's a great guy.
You two would talk for so long that at some points in the interview he would go, I haven't given you anything you can use yet, right?
This is no good, right, Neil? We gotta get better than this. Gary Shandling, rest in peace. 66 years old and really a loss. And he told me he wanted to do some new kind of series for HBO with only 4 episodes, but HBO wanted at least 6 episodes.
Was he in Iron Man?
Yes, Part One, and then Captain America, Winter Soldier. No, he was in Captain America. He had a little brief thing in the end. He was just doing little, but he was always doing stand-up. Always doing stand-up. Even when I would interview him, I go, "Where are you off to?" He goes, "I'm running downtown to do a set and do stand-up." And he was
in a lot of bad movies. I gotta say, I mean, Town and Country, and I mean, the thing he did with Mike Nichols, which should have been brilliant, was The Man from Another Planet or Man from Some.
Oh, right. I forgot what that.
Mike Nichols directed that.
I like that movie.
He wrote
that
movie.
I like that movie.
Yeah.
Well, you know, to me, he was great. His stand-up was great, but the Larry Sanders Show, without the Larry Sanders Show, there would have been no 30 Rock. There would have been no Judd Apatow.
Agreed.
I mean, he just launched the careers of so many people, and Apatow will even tell you, like, you know, I learned everything from Gary Shandling, you know? And if you watch that show and you go back, you'll go, John Stewart's on it. There's all these people that are on it that were nobody when the show was on, and they all went on to fame and fortune.
So, one of the catchphrases on Howard Stern is, hey now.
Hey now.
That's what they say, the Hank Kingsley
Tambor,
hey now.
Who actually supposedly in the show came up with that.
Yeah.
And then Gary Shandling said, I don't want you to say that because it annoys me.
That's a
and
very
then,
funny
you know, ironically,
episode.
It's one of the best phrases.
That's funny.
Right. Well, we said goodbye, so we'll say goodbye
so
again.
He's doing a show now with Patty Duke, right?
Yeah, Patty Duke.
Patty Duke.
Sorry. You know, there's never two without three, sadly. You know, when this goes up, hopefully that's it, but we'll see what happens. Anyway, thanks for sitting around talking movies with us, and we'll see you next week. We'll be right back.